Tactopia. Tactopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi, udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Ugeavisen Ingeniøren, med støtte fra Industriens Fond, Messecenter Herning, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tactopia. Ja, sommeren er over, så det betyder, at Tactopia det næste stykke tid kun udkommer hver anden uge, og at det, du kommer til at høre, det kommer til at være sådan en slags remix af ting, som jeg tidligere har lavet, eller ting, som jeg har fundet i skuffen, som du aldrig har hørt før, og som jeg egentlig aldrig fik sendt. Og det er faktisk sådan en, vi lægger ud med i den her uge, fordi det er en seance fra Techfestivalen 2019, hvor jeg havde nogle forskellige mennesker på scenen sammen med et veloplagt publikum. Det er et panel fra Techfestivalen 2019 i september sidste år, hvor jeg præsenterede tre teknologier, som du skal kende på scenen til et arrangement en af dagene på Techfestivalen. Jeg har klippet ned til at være kun to teknologier, fordi den tredje teknologi fik sin helt egen udsendelse og blev sendt sidste år. Men de første to, ja, dem fik jeg faktisk aldrig rigtig præsenteret andet end i min søsterprogram på Radio 4. Så nu får du dem her. Og det er altså optaget live på scenen til Techfestivalen i Kødbyen i København i september måned 2019. Og det er sådan en seance på dejlige dankles. Men sådan er det nu engang, fordi det var et internationalt publikum, og så måtte vi jo så folde os ud på vores bedste Valby-engelsk.
First guy on stage is Christian Grøndahl, who is the CEO of a company called Sniper Biome. And he is aiming to kill bacteria, especially bacteria that are actually killing us. So he's going to invent a new penicillin. And would you, if you just take a place in the sofa, because I'm going to invite the other guys as well. Second one on stage is Professor Jan Madsen from DTU Compute. And he's going to talk about something he calls microfluids. So what he is doing is actually, he's actually looking for bacteria in blood, for instance, which he puts into a computer. But not only does he put it into a computer, he actually prints the computer on paper, and then he sort of analyzes the blood. But he's going to talk about that a bit later, and he has promised me that he will show us a few slides in the video. I'm not sure whether we can actually see because of the sun, but anyway, we're going to try it. So this is sort of a conversational thing. Think of this as this is an evening in my home. I'm just kind of bored. My wife is watching the telly, so I invite a bunch of people over to talk about the stuff that they're doing, building in their garage. Okay, Christian, you are killing bacteria. Could you give us your pitch? What is it actually you're doing in Sniper Biome?
Yeah, well, good evening and thanks for coming. So we are actually trying to make a completely new penicillin. And then you could say, you know, why would anyone make a new penicillin? We already have penicillin. And that's true. We've had it for 80, 90 years, but it's actually not working so well any longer. And we have a situation where there's actually quite a number of these so-called superbugs that if we are, you know, unlucky to contract such an infection, it's not just going down to the pharmacy and picking up some penicillin and eating the pills. There's actually a situation today where 100 of us here in Denmark each year are actually dying just from a simple infection. So we want to use this new CRISPR technology that I'll talk to you about to actually selectively disrupt the genes of those very bad bacteria. And that has two sort of beneficial effects. First of all, we kill the bad guys, but also that we are actually sparing all the good ones. And there's also a greater appreciation that we have so many good bacteria on us. We are actually also bacteria. So it's a quite sort of mind-boggling thing that, you know, you and I are 10 to the 13th human cells, but we are actually also 10 to 13 bacteria. So they are actually part of us, so we better treat them well, because you know, without them we couldn't really survive. So so that's in essence what we are trying to do. We're trying to make new medicines that are very, very precise, hence the name of our company, Sniper Biome. They want to snipe out just one of the bad bacteria and leave the others alone. But Henrik was saying that I actually would like to, you know, ask you a question. So just out of curiosity, how many of you, with your show of hands, have actually heard about CRISPR before? So that's quite impressive. So that's probably half of you that have heard about CRISPR.
That's a very smart audience.
It's a very smart audience, I know. Yeah. But I'm amazed, not that you're smart, but actually that you have heard about CRISPR, because it's actually only 5 years old, or maybe that's a, you know, understatement. We've only discovered it 5 years ago, and I would say we, some very smart scientists in the U.S., and it has actually taken the world, you know, completely as a storm. So the whole world have sort of gone pretty crazy with CRISPR, and the number of publications are simply just increasing exponentially. But that's actually not, you know, a reason why you know it. There's so many other wonderful technologies that you probably haven't heard of that's also, you know, finding their way into the labs. But CRISPR is one of these very rare technologies that comes around maybe every 50 years and has the potential to actually disrupt our society almost with a magnitude like the Industrial Revolution. And, you know, in the future, the society that we will be in and the nature that we are, you know, surrounding us with, are likely to change due to CRISPR. So, of course, with such a powerful technology, one should be quite critical and also sort of really weighing up what are the positives and what are the negatives. But CRISPR has the potential to change the agricultural crops that we grow on our fields. It have the potential to actually be part of the solution of feeding not 7.5 billion people, but maybe 9 or 10 billion people. It have the potential to actually, you know, change all the animals that we have as you know, as husbandry animals, or that we eat. And right now, a lot of the crops that are standing around in the world has been CRISPRized. So just 2 minutes of what actually CRISPR is. So CRISPR has been around, and that's also mind-boggling, for billions of years. So CRISPR is actually an immune system that the bacteria, you know, the actually very smallest and simple organism that we know of, that they have developed to have a defense system against virus. And that's, you know, also quite strange that a bacteria can actually get a virus infection just like we can. Then it's not, you know, a flu or influenza or HIV. It's a bacterial virus. And that's probably the biggest sort of ongoing battle in the world, that bacteria and virus, they fight each other constantly. And as you probably know, there is bacteria and virus everywhere. So they are completely ubiquitous. They're everywhere. Out in the oceans, there are so many bacteria, but they are outnumbered 10 times by viruses. And every 24 hours, the viruses actually kill off 50% of the bacteria. So it's an ongoing battle. And CRISPR is actually an adaptive immune system for the bacteria to survive the virus. And just very briefly, how it works is that when the virus injects its little piece of DNA that it wants to, you know, overtake the bacteria with, CRISPR actually makes the bacteria able to cut the DNA. So CRISPR is a gene scissor or a gene scalpel that can cut very precisely in virus DNA. And here comes the fascinating part, that the DNA that there are in the virus, the DNA that is in the bacteria, and the DNA that we have in our cells are exactly the same. It's not just similar, it's exactly the same. So we can actually use that molecular scissor to make gene editing in all cells. So CRISPR is a very, very elegant and very, very versatile and very, very simple technology that is now in literally tens of thousands of labs that you can actually alter the genetic code. And of course, you can also think of that you can alter the genetic code of humans, which of course, in one way, is a great thing if you happen to have a genetic disease caused by just one or two genes that are defunct. You can have a very miserable life if you have just one or two proteins that you are missing. Hemophilia boys, for instance, that can't clot their blood is one example. And if you can correct that one gene, they will actually have a completely normal life. So CRISPR has the promise of actually curing many of these gene defects. And the way we want to use it in the company that I have been part of starting, and you're right, Henrik, it is a Danish invention and it's a Danish company. We want to make precision drugs that can either go after these super bugs that can actually kill off these bacteria before they kill us, or, and admittedly that's a more complicated thing, we can actually change the composition of our microbiome in our gut. And that microbiome, that's another big emerging field. And if you are trained, have a medical training like me, it's like having a completely new organ, being presented to you. There was no microbiome research when I was educated. It's actually only come live the last 5 years. These 10 to the 13 bacteria that we have in our gastrointestinal tract is completely essential for all our body functions, but it also plays a big role in the treatment of diseases. And one of the things we actually would like to do is make a new cancer treatment where we have the immune system that are interacting with the microbiome to actually kill off the cancers. That's a much longer story that I'd like to take you through another time, and will also be easier if I had slides, which we cannot have this afternoon. So I think I'll pause here and ask if you have any questions to that somewhat technical address.
I think we should save the technical questions for later. But I would like to ask you one thing, because
sure.
What people is always asking about CRISPR is, isn't it dangerous to people? I mean, you're going to change something in my stomach and then the bacteria will have a large effect on how I live or how I function.
Yeah, and that is a very good question. So if I was actually trying to change your genes, the genes inside your human cells, that could potentially be quite dangerous. And I had to be very careful only to cut in the gene that I wanted to and be very certain that I didn't have any negative effects on other genes. But just taking out one or several bacteria in your gut, we believe that will actually be a very safe treatment. But of course, we have to document that it's safe.
And then you have also been very modest. You've only been talking about the technology, but you actually raised quite a lot of money in your A series round, and I think people are interested in startups as well in this audience. So could you just briefly tell us about that?
Yes. So we have been very fortunate to raise a shitload of money. Excuse my French. So we have raised a third of a billion Danish kroner, and when you're only eight people, that's a lot of money. So 330 million Danish kroner. And the reason why we could raise such a big number, and now I'm very, not modest, it's the biggest Series A in Denmark ever, that is because of CRISPR. That is because of this technology. When you have such a transformatory technology and you are the first to actually take it into a new area like bacteria, and we are the first, and we have a very, very strong patent position, so we have 5 already issued patents, then those people that are sitting in the venture capital firms, they're looking at that and they're saying, okay, it might take them 1 year, it might take them 5 years to figure out how to turn this into a drug, but in the end, they will get there. And with this technology, they can probably make 20 new drugs that the world would appreciate.
And before you do that, you will need more money?
Sure.
You need to raise a lot more.
A lot more. So this is only the beginning, but that's how it is. I mean, you shouldn't look into too much of the statistics and how much money it is to make one new drug. So only 1 in 100 of the ideas, 1 in 100 makes it to a new drug. And only 1 in 10 biotechs actually make it all the way. The 9 others, they die in the ditch. But for those that actually make it, they can probably save the lives of 1,000 people, 100,000 people. So it's really worth the effort, and the world needs these new drugs. But typically, it takes several billion dollars to go to the market for a drug. So we can typically take this into the first clinical testing in, you know, 100 or 200 individuals, then for it to pass through all the tests of phase one, phase two, phase three, we would have spent way more than, you know, a couple of billion dollars.
Okay, killing bacteria, spending a lot of money. Yeah,
what's not to love?
That's Christian. Let's give him a hand.
Thank you.
Next one up is Jan Madsen, professor at DTU Computer, Danish Technical University. And you got a video or a slideshow?
I have it all.
You have it all. Okay, yeah. So... let's hear about microfluidics and how you have actually invented a lab on a chip. I mean, imagine a big lab like the ones that Christian is using in his company, and then scale it down to work on a chip. Please.
Yes. I'm actually a computer scientist, so you can think about why am I working with labs and microfluidics. Looking into the ways that labs are working and how you, if you want to have a diagnosis and so on, you have to get an appointment with the doctor, you have to get a blood sample, it has to be sent, it has to be treated in the lab, and you get a result back. We've been thinking about, wouldn't it be possible to do similar to what we have done with computers? So try to get them much more generic, get them smaller, and maybe something we can carry around. Now, if you look at the ways that people are working in the labs, it's using a hell of a lot of different small flasks where you move liquids using pipettes. Every time you have moved a liquid from one to another one, you have to dispose the tip of this one, so there's a lot of waste of plastic going on in this process of doing stuff in the lab. And you have to move these flasks into machines that can do heating or can steer them so that you can mix the liquids and so on. Now, of course, this technology has thought about doing this in a more automatic way. So today you have lab robots, so you've replaced the humans and just have robots, but they are still doing the same with pipetting and all this stuff. Now, what we have been looking into is then the microfluidic. And I don't know if you have heard about this. You probably have heard about lab-on-chip. Now, looking into this, there is a lot of really, really interesting chips being designed, but most of them are passive in the sense that you push liquid in, and then you do a lot of clever design of the tubings and the geometries that make these chips do a lot of different operations while this liquid is flowing through. But you cannot really control it. You cannot really change the things in the lab. But you can get it very, very small. Now, there is a way where you can actually get rid of the pipetting. You can get rid of all the containers that you have in which you are holding your liquids and doing all the reagents by just removing the flask and just keeping simple drops and then manipulating the drops. So the liquid in itself becomes a container where the reactions are happening. And this you can do in a very, very small scale. And if we can get it up, I promised I have a lot of slides, but I promise just to show you two, to give you an idea of how this works. So instead of using actuation by pushing and moving things, you can actually... and this one is a very, very simple chip. It's printed on paper. So as Henrik already said, some of these chips we can do in a very cheap and easy way. And you can see that there is a drop, a liquid. It's just water in this case. And if you put a current onto to the electrodes, you can actually magically move the drop around. Well, the way it happens is that when you have a drop lying in some place and you, on the electrode next to it, apply an electric potential, you change the angle of the drop, and that would actually turn it to move. Now, so this is a very simple way with two wires and doing stuff. Now, if you start thinking about what happens if we start building more electrodes, still in a very small scale, And we actually try to do the same as what we have done with computers. So one of the reasons we are in this digital area is the success of manipulating computers, not only getting them small, but also working with them in a more abstract way. So today we have managed to, let's say, do a very clear distinction between the software and the hardware. That means that the code, the programs you have, can run on different platforms. You don't have to recompile your word processor or something if you change your notebook for something else. We've also managed to really think about handling and dealing with information and not just the physical matter. Beneath, we are still working with physical matter. We are moving electrons around, so they are actually making the bit shift so that you can do whatever you will at the very high level. And then we have managed to make this abstraction that we can have compilers, so from a high-level description language where we express what the program should do, we have tools that can compile this into zeros and ones that the computer, the architecture we know, is actually working on. And the idea here is to, can we do the same with labs? And I'll show you the prototype we have today, and then I will say some more about it. So this is a platform that has 640 electrodes that we can manipulate. And this is real speed. The size of these drops is around 30 microliters. Doing the electrode smaller, we can get even smaller. We can get down to maybe 1 microliter or even sub-microliters to work with. So you can see on this one that by moving them around, we can actually get them to mix. So whenever a drop meets another one, you get twice the volume, and then you can move it around to mix it. And then at a certain point, when you're done, you can split them again. So by merging and splitting in a number of sequences, you can get to any concentration that you are interested in with the sample. Now, what I cannot show you now in this one is that we have in this system, so I'm showing here the open system. It's very difficult to split the drops because of the forces in the surface tension. But if you capture it in between two plates, you can actually pinch out small drops from bigger drops. So we can have the same effect that we have in pipetting. So we can actually manipulate these things. Then when we get to the point where we have something, you can see in this one, looks like Jupiter or something like this because it's not still fully mixed. And when we work with very, very small volumes of liquid, it the properties change a lot. It doesn't merge just by diffusion, so you have to move it around. It's actually, if you move it, it starts merging, and if you reverse 180 degrees, it unmerges a little bit, which is a little bit strange. But if you do it long enough, and long may not be very long, you actually get to a mixing of it. So we can completely get rid of all the pipetting, all the plastic waste on this. It's a very small lab. The prototype that we have at the moment is, I've brought one here. In this one, we build it on a printed circuit board, which allows us to have more dense number of electrodes. We can do heating. We can do measurement of the size of the droplet. So we can control everything going on inside the system. But the really nice thing about this is that everything can be controlled from a computer program. So we have worked on building high-level languages where you express the protocols that are needed. So it's the recipe to actually start taking this, mix with that, this long, heat it to this, and so on. All these instructions we can describe in a very high-level language and compile it into operations at this droplet level. Now, when having sensors as well, we can, while the process is going on, we can measure whether things are happening as they should, and if not, we can take actions while the experiment is running. This is something you typically don't do today. So we can do conditional experiments. So you see if you get the right things, you do something, you can roll back and redo things. So it gives a lot more flexibility. We are in the process of trying to convince biologists that they should learn to program in these languages. It's not so easy, because I learned that for a biologist, a protocol is just a name, and then you tell the assistant, this name, do PCR, and these are the ingredients you need to put in, and then they can go in the lab and do everything. Now, not only can we do the same trick and we can do the pipetting stuff with doing small drops, we can actually do it in a much more controlled way than what humans can do with pipetting. So with pipetting, you can get down to microliters, 5 microliters, a little bit lower than that, but then it becomes very, very difficult. You have to be very skillful in manipulating these pipetting, and they have to be calibrated very carefully. In this one, we can do stuff because we can see how well we took out the drops. We can redo things and so on. So it gives us a extreme flexibility in the things that we can do. Now, then you ask, what can you do with this platform? And in principle, the hope is that you can do anything you will do in a normal lab, but you can bring it with you. And it's not going to be very expensive. So it could be looking for bacteria in things. So we have a number of different projects where we are now exploring these technologies. So looking at bacteria in wounds, looking into bacteria and understanding bacteria in the communication between the soil and the roots of plants, because that is how to understand how well the plants are growing and behaving. And so a whole lot of things we can do in this. Now, one of the most interesting projects we are doing at the moment is trying to show that on this one we can do full sequence of cell cloning. So it's a little bit closer to the CRISPR. And that's because cells, you can also think of computers that you can reprogram. And then when you have the program of it, you need to assemble it and you need to get it loaded into the cell. And this is something we hope that we can show that we can do in these small labs as well. Yeah?
I think your time is sort of up.
I guess.
But it's extremely exciting. I was just wondering, Christian, would you have a question for Jan? Because I could imagine that you could use his technology for something.
Sure. I think it's fascinating, and I really look forward to that you have such a one in all the intensive care units and all the hospitals. So I only have to put a small drop of blood from the patient, and you can actually tell me what is the bacteria, not only what is its name, but what is the gene, what is the gene sequence, and then I can kill it. So, good luck with it. I hope you can make one of those.
So you're going to be sort of a bacteria killing squad, the two of you.
Yeah.
Bacteria busters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. We can do.
I can
use some of your money. Yes. That's.
Okay. I think you should save the money issue for the bar. Yeah. One last question for you. I mean, when you mentioned this thing, when you can print it on paper, it's actually possible to take it into, for instance, very far off places in Africa or India and do research.
Yeah. So this was one of the early ideas of this, that the ones you can print on paper. I mean, you only have one layer, so it's limited how complex it can be. But you can do a lot of the same processing. So one of the ideas is, because from the lab where this chip sets into, you can run it from a smartphone. So if you have this one and you have the smartphone and you have a printer, just a normal inkjet printer, you can print with conducting ink. And the idea would be you could set up very easily a lab in a remote area. And if you have internet connection, you go up and say, I need to have a lab that can see if I have these bacteria. You download it, you print it, you put it into the device, and then the smartphone already then have the program for running it as well. And then when you're done, you just burn the paper and everything is gone. So no cleaning and so on. So this is one of the one of the visions.
That's a vision for the future. When will this happen? When is it finished? When will you market it?
That's a good question.
So that's about the money, maybe. You can think about that.
Ja, du har lyttet til en sommerudgave af Techtopia. Jeg udkommer hver 14. dag i den her periode, og jeg graver lidt i skufferne og finder ting, som ikke har været sendt før, eller ting, som måske ikke er blevet hørt så meget, og som så fortjener en genopfriskning. Og det er sådan, det kommer til at være her i juli og august måned, fordi jeg har brug for at holde noget ferie, simpelthen. Men du kan jo som altid følge med på techtopia.dk eller på vores Facebook-gruppe, der hedder Techtopia Backstage. Og så kan du skrive til mig, henrik@techtopia.dk, men forvent ikke at svare før en gang i august. Du kan også følge os på Twitter på @techtopia.dk. Så må du bare have en rigtig god sommer, og jeg håber, du får lyttet til en masse dejlige podcasts, mens du går rundt i sommerværet. På genhør i næste uge. Techtopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi, udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Ugeavisen Ingeniøren, med støtte fra Industriens Fond, Messecenter Herning, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia. Techtopia.